On today's episode of the Launchpad Podcast, we're going to be talking about the Rockets' battle for the backup point guard position, comparing what the Rockets could have done if they had drafted Evan Mobley and Jaden Ivey versus drafting Jalen Green and Jabari Smith. And finally, we're going to be starting a new series where we're going to be using the 2K parameters to assess different Rockets players' skill sets going forward, and as well as evaluating their potential. So don't go anywhere. We have a great show for y'all today on the Launchpad Podcast.
Houston, Roger, we copy and standing by for your TV.
They throw it up, oh, there goes
Jalen Green. Humans can't fly.
Rebound picked up by Green, who's back in. Plays it ahead of Moore. Back to Green. Oh, and in time for Thanksgiving. But there's plenty of yams to go around.
Welcome into the episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Clutch City Control Room. As always, I'm your host, Don Knock. You can find me on Twitter at Don Knock. You can find the pod at Clutch City CR. If you go into the description there, you can find the link tree for the YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcast links. As always, I'm joined over there by my co-host, Paolo Alves. Paolo, tell the people where they can find your stuff.
What's up, everyone? You can find me on Twitter at PaulAlvesNBA. That's PaulAlvesNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts like this one to the last shows on Twitter Spaces, we'll find itself linked on there.
And bi-weekly, as usual, we are joined by Jackson Gatlin of Locked On Rockets and Locked On NBA Mondays. Jackson, tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Well, seeing as how Don already spilled the beans on half of it, now you can track me down on Twitter at JT Gatlin. Of course, I host Locked On Rockets 5 days a week, talking about your Houston Rockets, host Locked On NBA Mondays, host State of the Rockets with Roosh Williams. And then here I am bi-weekly on the Launchpad Podcast with two of my favorite people to talk Houston Rockets basketball.
Appreciate that. So we have an interesting show for y'all today. We're going to be talking about the Rockets battle for the backup point guard position that began in summer league between Ty Washington and Dacian Nix. We're going to be talking about a hypothetical of what if the Rockets had drafted Evan Mobley and Jaden Ivey rather than Jalen Green and Jabari Smith. And then we are going to get into a new series that we're going to be doing here, where we're going to be using the parameters of 2K and the attribute system to try to evaluate the Rockets players and, you know, use that to forecast a little bit of what their potential is going to be this season and going forward. So should be interesting. We'll you know, workshop a little bit on this episode. Hopefully we can iron it out to have it really locked in going forward. But to start out with,
Ronnie 2K, we're coming for your job. There we go. That's the way you get people going. Come on, man.
Okay. All right. I'm here for the Jackson energy. We are recording early today. So Jackson is, you know, he's already in the coffee, I would assume. Yep. There it is. No product, no free promo. Okay, no, he's doing the free promo anyway. He's got two coffees. All right, well, this is going to be an interesting day. But yeah, so to start out with, in the summer league, obviously the Rockets rolled out a couple different lineups, originally featuring Josh Christopher, and then as Josh Christopher transitioned out of his time playing in the summer league, they got more time for Ty Washington and Dacian Nix playing on the ball. And, you know, that sparked a lot of Dacian Nix versus Ty Washington and, you know, different camps going from there. Jackson, you were actually at Summer League in Las Vegas. What did you see during your time there? Do you have a preference between Nix and Washington? And how do you like either one of them filling that backup point guard role, you know, moving it into the start of the season?
I think right now I'd still, and I've been leaning this direction, you know, for a while. I was kind of feeling this before summer league. I still feel this way after summer league. I think right now the backup point guard spot belongs to Dacian Nix. I think it's his job to lose, essentially. And I don't think that his summer league performance did him a disservice in any capacity, right? Like, I don't think Ty Washington outplayed him in summer league. I think both of them had games where they were up and down. Dacian kind of came out of the gate a little weak, right? That first game against the Orlando Magic was a bad game by Dacian Nix. And a lot of Rockets fans were immediately up in arms. And they were like, no, Ty Washington should be starting. Dacian Nix is garbage, like all this stuff. And I was like, well, pump the brakes, all right? Like, we saw Dacian Nix look like LeBron James in the G League. And that didn't convey in the first game. And then thankfully he had a strong bounce back game the very next, you know, the very next outing. And across the rest of the summer league, I thought he looked solid, right? Didn't blow me away, but also didn't do enough to hurt his stock moving forward, at least in my opinion. So as far as specifics in their game, I think that Dacian looked a lot more comfortable on the floor with the rest of like the summer league crew compared to what he looked like when he was on the floor with the regular Houston Rockets, like in the brief stints that we saw with him during the regular season. He looked more confident. He looked more sure of himself. He looked more engaged in what he was doing offensively, being a bit aggressive, right? Actually attacking the rim, looking to kind of create his own shot and also break down the defense and really create for his teammates. Whereas a lot of times when he was playing with the Rockets, it felt like he was just kind of walking the ball up and then being incredibly passive, like not really playing his game, the game that made him Dacian Nix with the RGV Vipers, right? The Dacian Nix that averaged like 30-something points a game, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. Like, again, LeBron James Dacian Nix. Didn't look like that at all with the Rockets. And he didn't really look like that in summer league either. He played a more traditional point guard role. And I think the biggest thing for him moving forward is establishing his voice, right? You know, becoming kind of a more vocal player on the court, especially when you're in that point guard spot. You've got to be able to orchestrate things offensively. You've got to be able to bark at people and tell them what to do and what not to do, where to be. I think between the two of them, Dacian Nix is probably the more competent, at least right now, is the more competent half-court playmaker, in my opinion, whereas Ty Washington looks a little bit more comfortable operating in transition, really running the break. I thought that's where the difference was in their playmaking styles to me, although Ty Washington did display an ability to break down a defense in the half-court as well and find the open man. He had some really impressive potential assists that didn't wind up actually converting to dimes because the Rockets could not shoot a lick in summer league. Nobody was making anything. But between the two of them, I think we can walk away impressed by both of them without having to truly make it a Dacian versus Ty Ty argument, like at its core, right? But at this point, I'm probably a little bit further ahead on Dacian Nix. I think Ty Ty Washington still has some work and still has some room to grow moving forward.
Yeah, I think it, no matter how you spin it, it will always end up being a Ty versus Nix thing, because as long as Josh Christopher is there and KPJ and Jalen Green are the starters, there's one hole and it's the backup point guard, and you're not really going to play. I mean, Nix could maybe play a little bit small forward in a tough...
Wait, there's one hole, title of your sex tape. Continue.
Look at this guy, dude. We invite this guy. Ugh, whatever.
Hey, I told you there was going to be no shenanigans before the podcast, and I told you there was going to be maximum shenanigans in the podcast. So here we are, not even 11 minutes in. You're welcome. Please continue.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
He did say that. That's very fair.
He did. And so going into the actual debate between the two, I'm more than confident that there's absolutely zero shot that Ty Ty is the one to start the season, just because that's just how the team works. They value seniority above. Sometimes they need to. I'll just put it like they need to see you do or look better for a long time before they actually give you the position, right? So Nix is gonna be the starter no matter what. That being said, if you asked me, not the starter, the one that starts off the bench to begin the season at the start of the season.
The primary backup.
The primary, oh, that's awesome. The primary backup, right? But I would say if it were up to me, Ty would be the one that plays. Mostly because it's an archetype type of thing. I think Ty is the better defender. I think Ty navigates screens the best out of the two, which is important for a point guard who's most of the time going to be a defending point of attack. And then I like Ty's 3-point shot more. I like Ty's pick and roll game more. I think he's better at manipulating the pick and roll game. I think he's more complete as a scorer in the sense of while Nix can get to the rim more easily versus Ty, who's not as shifty or strong, or who's more shifty but not as strong and not shifty enough to just break people down on one-on-one, at least at this point in his career. Ty has the mid-range game. Ty has a really quick pull-up 3-point shot. So those are characteristics that make... And when he does get to the rim, right, he struggles to create the advantage to get to the rim. But if it's in a pick-and-roll situation and the advantage is being created by the pick-and-roll and he can get to the rim, he's a really crafty finisher when he gets there as well, right? And so because of that, I think he's... projects to be, or has the higher likelihood to be, a backup point guard at the NBA level in his future, right? I think Knicks might have a little bit of a higher ceiling because he's more unique as a point guard. He even looks like a wing, even though he finishes at the rim. It's wing-like, right? He's the gets the rim and then banks the shot in instead of like going for the layup or something like that. And
he's taller. Kyle Lowry is what he is. Like that's what his game reminds me of, right? Is Kyle Lowry would play that like bully ball drive style where he'd get to the rim and just body guys off of him. But Dacian Nix has the advantage because he's 4 or 5 inches taller than Kyle Lowry is, and he's got an equally like sizable frame, right? Just the beef on him. He's able to body through guys, right? He's thick, right? The shout out to Sam Mitchell, right? He's got that junk in the trunk, as he said on the broadcast. I agree with you. Ty's got the floater game that Ty has is impressive. Like the fact that he has a go-to mid-range like weapon like that already at this age in his career. I need you to understand, there was a point where the Rockets were warming up, and I think I shared this on social, I think I did. Ty put like 20 floaters up in a row. Like all he was doing, other guys were taking threes pregame. He was putting up floaters, didn't miss a single one until he got to like over 20 in a row. And he finally like went a little bit off back iron on the last one. And I was so mad that I didn't get it on video because it was just so effortless. Like just, and from different spots, like he wasn't just standing in one spot sending the same floater up. He was ping-ponging from one side of the paint to the other, shooting up, floaters from the right, not the right block, but just kind of the right side of the paint, then the left side. Sometimes he'd stop in the middle. He was getting them from three different locations, and he just didn't miss one. So I was sitting there on the baseline, like, just dumbfounded that he had it down that perfectly. So, yeah, shout out to Ty Washington's floater game.
So concluding what I was saying, so I think Ty is going to be the better pick and roll ball handler, right? I think defensively, even though Knicks is 2 inches taller, Tyta has the longer wingspan. Tyta has got a 6'8 or 6'9 wingspan, while Knicks has a 6'7 wingspan. And so he's just more shifty, gets around screens better. I trust him to become the better defender eventually. He's also quicker on his feet. And he takes that side of the ball personally. I'm not sure if Knicks does or not. And then off the ball, right? So I've looked at it defensively. I've looked at it as the lead ball handler running the pick and roll, right? Looking at, as a floor general, I think they're pretty close. Although Knicks kind of look a little bit worse in summer league, but if you go look at his G League performances, you'll see that he's a better passer than he was in summer league. But then off the ball, I think Tyta is also the better player there. I think he's got the quicker jump shot. I think Knicks shot 40% from three in the G League, right, on significant volume. So that's to be decided, but I do think it's valuable to have a jump shot that's quicker to get off. I think Tyta is the better defender. And so if you're not going to have the ball in your hands, what actually matters is how good are you at catch and shoot, how good are you at defense, and how good are you at attacking closeouts. And I would give the edge to Tyta right now because even though Knicks would probably be the best at attacking closeouts, matter of fact is he's going to draw a lot of fouls. And he was a terrible free throw shooter, 50% in summer league. And even the G League last year, this was not a low volume summer league type of thing. You can track it back to the G League last year. And he was a terrible free throw shooter there as well on higher volume. And so if you are this bully ball type of point guard, Kyle Lowry, taller Kyle Lowry like Jackson said, it is really important that you're a good free throw shooter because you're going to get to the line a bunch. And it's kind of dysfunctional if you're really good at getting to the line, but then you're terrible at knocking down the free throws, right? And so it's just, Knicks is an interesting prospect. I think Tyta is the more modern prospect. I think he fits into more situations in the league, and I think because of that, he has the higher likelihood of fitting into a bunch of systems and of making the NBA and being a rotational piece at the very least. And so because of that, I would rather take the bet on him, knowing that Knicks is for sure going to get the primary
backup. There you go.
To start
so season. Proud of you.
So just a little, to humor Brad Muse. I'm sure he's going to be listening to this very intently. We got some summer league stats we're going to throw out here real quick for these guys. So they both played around 27 minutes. Knicks was at 27.5. Ty was at 26.5. Knicks was at 13.4 points. Ty 9.4. So scoring edge, we go to Knicks. Assists, 4.4 assists for Knicks versus 3.8 for Ty. And again, Ty did function in more of an off-ball role for most of Summer League. So the fact that his assist numbers are, you know, even close in this scenario is, you know, pretty good mark in his favor. And then rebounding, they both had 3.6 rebounds per game. So, you know, statistically, not really a large advantage either direction outside of Knicks scoring wise. So yeah, I think, you know, what Paolo was saying is a lot of this is remains to be seen. I think training camp is going to be very important for these guys, as well as the preseason in terms of shaking this battle loose. But, you know, I personally do like Ty's ability to run the offense, because I think it would please me, at least, to have, you know, Eric Gordon, KPJ, Jalen Green, one of those three guys out there with whoever ends up winning the backup point guard spot, and those guys can function more in a scoring type of role versus Dacian Nix, right? Like, Dacian Nix is a good passer. He makes some good reads, but, like, for me, I feel like Dacian Nix is largely a score-first type of guard. So four score-first types of guards out there at the same time, I think there's a little bit of overlap, even though, you know, we had the James Harden, Chris Paul, they both need the ball thing that was a little bit overblown. I think, you know, four guys in that mold may be a little bit too much. So having at least one guy out there that is a little bit more of a quote-unquote like change of pace type of guy and is more focused on playmaking, I think that would be ideal for myself. You know, if Ty comes out and is not translating into the big team the way he was to the Summer League team, then you're going to have to obviously reassess there. But, you know, just based off Summer League, based off what we saw, based off the archetypes, you know, I would personally lean Ty right now. And there's plenty of time. We have a long season. I'm sure this will, you know, meander different ways as the season goes on, and the different factions will vie for their guy. But that's where I am right now. Do you have any closing thoughts on the Ty versus Knicks situation?
We need to decide. I think that the key factor here is who's got the best vibes, and I think that guy should get the job.
Yeah, that's definitely the way to evaluate a prospect and figure out who should earn minutes in the Rockets rotation. No, I think all the criticisms are fair game, right? The free throw shooting is super concerning for Dacian Nix, right? Is it a mental thing? Is it a Christian Wood thing, right? Where he's just like, he's a great shooter outside the free throw line, but like, what gives once he gets to the free throw line? Like, that's wild. And then I do think, like, Ty's the better off-ball player. Absolutely agree there. I will say that Dacian Nix's three-point shot does look really solid, and he has gotten a quicker release on it. Like, he looked very fluid, especially there were some catch-and-shoot opportunities where he got the, you know, there was one where Ty hit him, like, late in the shot clock, or, like, from the left wing and, like, blasted it over to the right wing with, like, a few seconds left on the shot clock. And Dacian had no choice but to just, like, immediately, like, elevate into a shot and just drained it immediately. So, like, I think Dacian's release has gotten better, and I am confident in that three-point shot moving forward, depending on, right, he doesn't need to necessarily be, you know, a super amazing off-ball player, like relocating and you know, running around screens and stuff off-ball. Like, I'm not expecting that out of Dacian Nix. Just be a catch-and-shoot threat, right? Like, be ready to, you know, be in your spot, in the slot, at the top of the key, wherever, catch the ball when somebody else breaks down the defense and shoot it, and still be the guy that kind of, like, you know, at times can orchestrate, initiate the offense a little bit. That's kind of where I think it comes down to, is what are the lineups that Steven Silas wants to place around that backup point guard, right? Because if he's comfortable having that backup point guard be the person who's predominantly going to have the ball in their hands and create for others, then I think Dacian Nix fits that mold quite well. If you want that backup point guard to have the ability to play off of other guys more consistently, then I think Ty makes a little bit more sense. So I can see the arguments for both sides. Right now, I'm still very much in the Dacian Nix camp.
I think, just before we close, another thing that I think it's important is, last season, people on Twitter and Rockets fans in general, a lot of people wanted to see a lot of staggering between KPJ and Jalen Green. So we could see Jalen Green get a little bit more on-ball reps, right? And we saw that to various degrees as the season closed, right? We saw Silas Wood do staggering one game and then not do the staggering the game after, and then go back to doing the staggering, right? And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But if you're going to do that, then you'd want your backup point guard to be someone who can adapt to both circumstances. And so if we end up doing that as the season rolls along, I think in that sense, Taita will also be the better fit as the more versatile of the two between playing both both on and off the ball.
All right, so that brings us to a good stopping point. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about if we were in a different multiverse, you know, what would have happened if the Rockets had taken Evan Mobley and Jaden Ivey rather than the two guys that they did pick in Jalen Green and Jabari Smith. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Continuing our second segment here on the Launchpad Podcast, we are going to do a little bit of a multiverse, a little bit of a hypothetical here. Obviously, the Rockets last year drafted Jalen Green. This year, they drafted Jabari Smith. We had, you know, last year, to varying degrees, people that thought that we should have drafted Evan Mobley. So we're going to do a little bit of exploration here about, you know, the sequencing of the picks. You drafted a guard last year and then a big this year. What if we had drafted a big last year and a guard this year in Jaden Ivey? So, Paolo, I'm going to let you start.
You're being way too non-confrontational. This is basically this.
I'm easing them into it. Okay, we're gonna take this slow, and then we can accelerate
would
from
you,
there.
The question is: would you rather have Jalen Green and Jabari Smith, or Jaden Ivey and Evan Mobley? That's the question. Cavs fans listening, that's the question. No, I'm not joking.
I gave this beautiful soliloquy about
I'd rather have Herbert Jones and Jose Alvarado.
Disrespected Trey Murphy. No, whatever.
All right.
I wanted Trey Murphy bad last draft. If we can do some multiverse shenanigans to get Trey Murphy on the Rockets, I'd let some head roll. I'd let some heads roll for Trey Murphy. Absolutely.
Yeah. So back into the.
Go ahead.
So I'll focus a little bit on the Jalen Green versus. I'll focus a little bit on the Jalen Green versus Mobley thing, because just at a national media level or a Twitter level, it's so insane how Jalen Green is viewed as this guy that started off really badly and then just to close out the season he was really good, right? And then Evan Mobley is viewed as this guy that played great all season but then played a little bit bad for the stretch where Jared Allen wasn't there, right? And these are so, that's such a terrible way of putting it, because it's not true whatsoever. I went and checked the stats, right? Jalen Green's like last little bit of the season is actually 35 games. So 50% of the games he played in total, more than 50%, where he averaged 24-3 on 47-39-77 splits, right? This was not the back end of the season. This was literally half his games.
It was like two thirds of the season, honestly. Like we've all done this before where we go back. If you look at his, it's right when he came back from the injury. Like when he made it back from the injury, he had a brief stint where he popped off a little bit. Then he hit that shooting slump for a few games, like a handful of games. But if you average it out from where he came back from the injury all the way to the end of the season, it's like close to 50 games or so. It's like 48, I think. He had a strong season. So people overblow, like the rough start that he had with the 15 game losing streak, all that. People try to take that sample size and say, oh, he had a bad, bad half of his season. He was bad all the way till All-Star break. Hell no. And that's the part that we got to push back on.
Yeah. And so you can push that a little back even more, as Jackson said, and he will still look good. But 24-3 on 47-39-77 splits, that's not just good. That's insanely good for a rookie. Okay, that's insanely good efficiency. So, and then we look at the other side of Evan Mobley, who's like the guy that everybody loves, right? For the last 43 games of the season, which means the latter 62% of the season, he averaged 16-8-3, which is okay. But when you look at his percentages in his shot, 52-17 from three and 61% from the line. And so, yes, he played good defense, but it's also very easy, and the stats back it up. When Jared Allen was not there and he was forced to play center, his defensive numbers fell off a cliff as well. So it's not like he was the reason the Cavs were good defensively. No, the Cavs were a good team with Jared Allen as the center, and Evan Mobley played off of that. Okay, and it has always seemed so unfair that
Paolo's trying to say is
Evan Mobley rode Jared Allen's coattails to success. There you go.
So I think when we got into a little bit yesterday on the timeline, right, was about like Evan Mobley's a center, but Jabari Smith is a four. And see what you just outlined, it's like, okay, well, if Jared Allen is the center, then Evan Mobley's really not the center. You have Mobley in, you know, somewhat of a off ball, weak side rim protection role, but he's not the center defensively. So that, I think that's where that brings this comparison more into play versus if Evan Mobley went to a team where he was just playing straight up center the entire time. Right. And when you look at Mobley versus Jabari in terms of perimeter defense, I think you say the Mobley rim protection is definitely going to be more elite than what Jabari is giving you as a rim protector. Right. And to Jabari's credit, a lot of times in summer league, they were using him to guard centers. He guarded Chet very well in that matchup. And, you know, there's a body type similarity there that, you know, probably assisted Jabari in that matchup a little bit. But, you know, he did well when he played center. He played center defensively in a couple games here. And when you saw Jabari guarding on the perimeter, though, it was like, yeah, this guy can slide his feet incredibly. He has very good anticipation, very good grasp of like what the offensive player is trying to do. We saw, I can't remember who the play was against, but he had the play where he slid his feet, the guy kind of went up for the shot, and Jabari just basically snatched the ball from him right underneath the basket and then outlet passed it really quick after that. But yeah, like I said, bringing this around, because Evan Mobley is being used more as like a weak side guy and guarding on the perimeter, that really brings in a lot of Jabari Smith's strengths as a defender, guarding the perimeter, sliding his feet, you know, being able to play passing lanes and having quick hands and things like that. And so I think in that lens, it brings it a little bit closer to where the offensive element can come into play. It's not like, oh, you know, Mobley just this light years ahead, to use a bad phrase that Rockets fans don't like.
Streets ahead.
There we go. Like streets ahead defender. And Jabari, the offense, you know, it's not going to make up for the defense. Like a lot of people will say, you know, Jalen Green, this guy's an offensive player. The defense is a negative, right? It's not that way for Jabari, right? His defense is still very good. And then now he can bring in the offensive element to where, you know, we're expecting that Jabari is going to take a big shooting leap over what Mobley put on tape and, you know, in the stat sheet last year. And
which was, let me repeat, 17% for 62% of his games, and 60%
and 25% for the full year. So, you know, it's not like, you know, we had KJ Martin where KJ Martin, you know, he started shooting the year pretty bad and then still wound up at the end of the year, you know, shooting 36%, right? Evan Mobley had a hot streak, and then the bad streak brought him down to where he's at 25% on the full season. And the volume is not high for either one of those guys. So it's not like it's a, you know, unreasonable comparison. They're both shooting below, I think, three or four attempts a game.
I don't think it's really a contest between, at least for now, between Jabari and Mobley. I think we might have that debate a couple years down the line. I don't regret, and people were on me on Twitter because I said this wasn't specific, wasn't close for me. I would much rather have Jalen and Jabari over Hivey and Mobley, just because I had Jalen over Mobley during the draft, and then the seasons, as much as the narrative surrounding the two players that Jalen was terrible and that Mobley was a god because his team was better, for me, the season kind of validated what I thought. I already thought that I valued Jalen Green's archetype better than Jabari, better than Mobley, I mean. And then Jalen, if anything, he made me even higher on what he is. I think his commitment to defense, although he was lost at the beginning of the season, mostly because of, you know, more VQ things, more of awareness things rather than actually trying. I think it was impressive to see him down 20 on a 15-win team and still giving it his all defensively, fighting through screens and making taking it personal on that side of the ball, specifically in the second half of the season, right? And so I'm higher on him as a defender. I thought he showed a lot of passing flashes. I think he was really good at manipulating and using his swiftness to open up passing angles that most people wouldn't be able to achieve because they're not Jalen Green or as athletic and quick as he is. And so I think he can be a really unique player. I think he has the potential to be the best shooting guard in the league. And I think that's a really important role, especially if he can become a two-way player, right? I think that offensive engine is the most important type of player in basketball. And this is not a slight on Mobley. I would have taken Mobley over anybody in this draft, including the guy that I like the most in Paolo Banchero, right? Mobley's a really useful player. I just think Jalen Green's better. And then just to, I think, transition a little bit into the Ivy versus Jabari thing. I mean, I was one of the lowest people on Rockets Twitter on Jabari, and I still had him above Ivy. And it's like, we haven't seen nearly enough from Ivy for it to warrant him being considered someone who's a hit already. I think what the questions about Ivy are still very much there. And I'd rather have the offensive option first and have that be the superstar and have the defensive presence be, if you want to put it like that, a step below in terms of talent, which is what happens with Jalen Green and Jabari Smith. But with Mobley and Ivy, you've got Mobley who's the better talent, and you've got Ivy who's the below him. I'd rather the offensive talent be the higher tier talent than the defensive talent. And I mean, it just fits my option of Jalen and. This is too many names, dude. Jalen and Jabari over Mobley and Ivy. And this is no slight towards any of those players, but I think Jabari's versatility defensively that he's shown in Summer League and the fact that I don't think his jump shot is what he showed in Summer League. I think he was nervous. I think he was playing a different position that demanded more energy out of him. He was not putting his legs into his shot. His shot was looking flat because of it. And so, I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. And I know it's probably not as different as what I think it is. The gap's not as big as I think it is, but I think the gap's there.
That literally went on forever. I thought you were never going to stop talking.
Oh, God. Wow. Okay.
Dude, that's brutal.
Jackson getting at Paolo here. All right. I just want to circle back to the – I guess Paolo wanted to frame it as like draft by draft, but for me, I do like to look at this more player versus player. And, you know, when you compare Jalen Green and Jaden Ivey, you know, these are both two guys that are nuclear athletes. Ivey shoots the three from deep, you know, pretty well in college. His overall 3-point numbers kind of took a kind of crazy swing between the first half and the second half of the season. He shot really well in the first half. But, you know, Jaden Ivey, his playmaking is, I would say it's a little bit better than Jalen Green's was coming in, but that's still not one of like the really, you know, standout elements of his game. I think finishing at the rim, the athleticism, a little bit of the shooting, I think that's really where Jaden Ivey is going to stand out on the court. And, you know, I think Jalen Green, he matches Jaden Ivey in most of those categories. Obviously, you know, nuclear athlete, the playmaking we saw last year, it came along nicely. He's not making super advanced reads just yet, but you know, the foundation was laid last year for him to continue to take a leap as a playmaker. And, you know, we've seen other wings, you know, make that leap, you know, someone like DeMar DeRozan, right? Someone like Zach LaVine, these guys added playmaking to their game, you know, as their career went on. Jalen, I like his shot better than Ivy's. I think it's a little bit more consistent, especially we saw like towards the end of the year when, you know, Jalen was really shooting well. And the space creation, you know, because Ivy is a nuclear athlete, he's going to be able to create space and generate that at the rim and as well as on the perimeter. But Jalen is just as good of an athlete. I think he may be a little bit more natural of a ball handler. I think Ivy is a little bit more physical of a ball handler. Jalen has a little bit more side to side from what I've seen. But I think the one thing that you can really tip in Jaden Ivey's favor at this point is the strength. You know, he really does have the NBA body. He's not needing to add a bunch of strength the way that Jalen's going to need to. And you know, I am someone who believes that Jalen's going to do that. When you're as athletic as he is, you know, it's not a question of can he put on strength, put on size. You know, I think, you know, he does have a slender frame, but I think, you know, if you're that level of an athlete, you're going to be able to at least add functional strength, whether or not you add, you know, a lot of bulk. So those are the categories I'm really watching. You know, Ivy, maybe a little bit more.
Don, we don't refer to it as bulk. We refer to it as junk in the trunk. Come on, get with the program, man.
All right, junk in the late
forever trunk. Going to be a commentating legend now.
But yeah, I think defensively, you know, Ivy may have a little bit higher pedigree defensively coming in than Jalen Green did. But again, with Jalen, there's no reason why he doesn't have the defensive tools, the effort level, and the focus defensively to be someone that is at least, you know, a plus defender on that side. So I think these guys are maybe a little bit closer than maybe even some Rockets fans want to admit. I was a little bit higher on Ivy than some in the fan base, but, you know, if you go line for line here, I think I still grade out Jalen higher than Jaden Ivey, and I'm glad that we ended up drafting him in the sequence that we did.
Yeah, I think if you were to put some of these prospects like just in a straight up vacuum, right, like, and compare them one for one, like if you're going to put Evan Mobley and Jabari Smith in a vacuum, I think I'd probably go Evan Mobley over Jabari Smith, and I don't think that's a hot take. Like, I just think Evan Mobley is that pure, like, just from a prospect evaluation standpoint, trying to throw out what we saw from this past season, right? If you're trying to evaluate them based on where they were at when they're coming out of college, right? I think that a majority of the guys that went throughout, like, the top five in last year's draft could have all been possibly consensus number one guys in this year's draft, right? And that was kind of the whole, like, you know, thought process leading up to the draft, was that this draft at the top wasn't necessarily as strong as the previous draft. And I think maybe we might look back on that and realize that that was a mistake, at least in the pre-draft process, because some of these rookies look really damn good, at least in summer league so far, and they may turn around and prove us wrong that the top of this draft is actually just as strong, if not stronger, than the 2021 draft class. But I think if you look at Jalen Green and Jaden Ivey in a vacuum together, one-for-one comparisons, I feel confident in saying that I'd still take Jalen Green over Jaden Ivey as far as just a raw prospect is concerned. And I think that there's one thing that stands out, right? And this is something that Rafael Stone has said repeatedly, right? If you have two players who are of equal skill level, but one of them is taller and bigger, then that's the better player. And I think that when you look at Jaden Ivey, even though he's got more of an NBA-ready body right now, he's got the muscle, he's got the strength to kind of go against other NBA players and not necessarily need that adjustment period to kind of size up to NBA competition like Jalen does. You know, he needs a couple years in the weight room, right, to add, you know, that 10 to 15 pounds of muscle, whatever he's going to get added to his frame. Jalen's still the taller, bigger player. So once Jalen does add that to his frame, right, his ability both on both sides of the basketball, defensively and offensively, is going to suddenly just grow exponentially, right? Being able to finish stronger through contact, being able to draw contact and still get to his spots, right? All of that, all of those things where he's got the skill already, but he doesn't have the physicals to match that yet. Jaden Ivey has a ton of skill as well, and he's already got some of the physicals. So I think that almost in a way dampens his ceiling a little bit, right? Because there's another gear for Jalen to kind of tap into physically once he is, you know, bulks up a little bit more and all, you know, still refines his game. They both still have a lot of room to grow in their respective game, in their respective skill levels. But yeah, I'd take Jalen over Jaden Ivey pretty confidently. I think if the question is, but at the root of the question, right, it was essentially, right, would you flip the drafts? Would you flip it and go Mobley and Ivey against Jalen and Jabari? And I don't think I would flip it, right? I think if you're just looking at the comparisons of the bigs and then the guards, I think it's slightly more interesting debate if you're going Mobley versus Jabari. And that's coming from a guy who had Jabari number one on my board, right? That's really tough. If you were to ask me to put those two guys in a room together and decide which one I want to walk out with, I think there's a very, very strong argument for Evan Mobley there. Especially if you're not looking at it in the confines of like what he would look like on this Rockets roster, like all this stuff. I still think Jabari's like the seamless fit for everything that this Rockets roster needs, which plays into the whole fit versus BPA argument. I'm not going to, you know, open up that can of worms here. But yeah, I think that the way that the Rockets handled their draft philosophy, the way that they handled the 2021 draft and the 2022 draft, it's that interesting dichotomy, right, where they got two in incredibly impressive offensive talents from last draft, right? In Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün. And then this year they flipped the script, right? And they got two incredibly impressive defensive talents in Jabari Smith and Tari Eason. And that's not even counting guys like Josh Christopher and Usman Garuba later in the first round, and then Ty Washington also later in the first round. So you're just looking at the first and secondary picks, right? At the top of the draft and then at the middle tier of the first round. And I don't know if that was the game plan going in. If it was, then it's just like 4D chess by Rafael Stone, where he's just like, you know what? We're going to take the best guard prospect available in this draft because I can look down the line at next year's draft. And I know that there's three bigs that are coming out that are going to be really impressive at the top of the draft. I'm expecting to have a pick somewhere around there. So if I take the top draft pick here, you know, top guard prospect, get another big in next year's draft, and then let the chips fall where they may in the following draft with Wimby and Scoot available and you know, a ton of other talent in addition to those two guys, then so be it. Maybe that was the draft philosophy, right? Maybe that was the plan overall. Right now, I feel confident, though, in the way that it all played out and the way that the chips ultimately did fall for this Rockets team.
Yeah.
All right, Paolo, do you want to give us the final word on this, and then we'll go to break?
Yeah, to me, it's. I also believe that Evan.
Don't Williams go too long. I've got my hand on the button. I'm ready for you.
Nah.
Yeah, we're gonna teach Paolo how to be concise today, or else.
So I do have Mobley over Jabari, and I do have Gillen over. Wait, what?
I'm just messing with you.
I didn't actually hear it this time. Okay.
Because I cut it off. That's why I was.
Oh, you did.
I gave you just a taste because I can be like.
That literally went.
The production value on this podcast is through the roof. I don't know if. Now, but as I said, I have Mobley over Jabari and I have Jalen Green over Ivy, right? But the gap between Green and Ivy to me is a lot bigger than what the gap is between Mobley and Jabari, right? And I do think that depending on the team that you're building, there are scenarios where Jabari is more valuable than what Mobley is. I think the fact that he's more versatile, right? He can play next to more types of players. And so I think that has value as well, even if Mobley is fundamentally the better player and the better prospect. That versatility, to me, was the case for Jabari all along, even before the draft, that was his case above Chet and Paolo. That versatility has to play a factor into it. And as a team that's projected to have another top draft pick next year and a ton of cap space, 70 million in cap space, that versatility will likely come in handy when you're going after a max free agent and Jabari fits with any of them, even if they're a center, right? Or if you're going after if you go after Scoot Henderson, Jabari fits well, but Mobley would as well. But if you were going after Victor Wembanyama, then I think you'd rather have Jabari with him than you would Mobley. So, and that the same goes for Kel Aware or Derek Lively, right? And so, yeah, that versatility plays a little bit into it, but it's partly why, to me, it's not close, because I was higher on Jalen pre-draft, and I'm even higher on Jalen now, and I already had him above Mobley pre-draft, and I mean, I have him above Mobley now, if that was ever a question.
I'm glad that no one here said that they would take none of these guys and they would actually take Keegan Murray. So, you know, Summer League MVP.
Whoa. Sacramento Kings just catching strays out of nowhere.
Dude, that's a Summer League MVP. You should respect them, okay?
I know, so I'm saying. I'm surprised neither one of y'all said you'd take him instead.
Did you see the Clutch Fans post? Like, in 3 years.
Hey, who was the Summer League MVP last summer? Exactly. Nobody cares. Nobody remembers. Cam so Thomas? There we go.
Was it not Cam Thomas or Jalen Johnson, I think?
I have no clue. So there we go. Shows you how important Summer League MVP is.
It was a Rocket I would have remembered. But right. Yeah.
That feeds the agenda. Duh.
Oh, yeah. So whoever won Summer League MVP last year, their fan base let them down by not, you know, pushing that aggressively on the timeline.
Look, if Tari Eason doesn't get a little banner on his basketball reference page that he was all NBA Summer League first team, I will riot. Okay. We're adding B reference until they
that's
add
a great
that.
Point. Yeah. Obviously, for me, you know, probably the number one Mobley hater in the fan base. I am not switching either. I'm very comfortable with the pairing that we got. I was a big Jalen person last year, and I do like the fit with Jabari alongside Jalen and the rest of the guys we have here. So I think the Evan Mobley 3-point shooting revelation numbers have just kind of like locked this in for me in a way that it really didn't need to be locked in even further. But, you know, I went back yesterday and looked at some of the scouting reports on him pre-draft, and a lot of it was like, you know, great jumper, going to be a three-level scorer. I remember there were people that were like, this guy's like KD and AD and Kevin Garnett mixed together. And I think a lot of that stuff pre-draft, like, it's very unfair to compare people to all-time greats just generally, like as a concept. But I think some of the early Mobley push was just so aggressive. And that's kind of just like Jackson says, like just kind of like lasted the, like no, nothing has like, it's just continued on, right? There's no force working against that up to this point. Evan Mobley had a pretty good season. The Cavs made the playoffs versus the Rockets, were the worst team in the NBA. And it's going to take a while for those narratives to kind of equalize out to where a lot of people, you know, were slandering Jaylen and things like that. But overall, yes, I would, to answer the initial question, I would still take Jaylen and Jabari in the redraft if we had to do it all over again. And we're going to get a little bit more into Jaylen when we come back in our next section. We're going to talk a little bit about 2K type of parameters of rating players' games. We're going to do this for most of the players on the Rockets roster. Maybe not Eric Gordon. We'll see if we do Eric Gordon eventually
respect
in time. But
Eric Gordon.
I do respect Eric Gordon. He's a legend. We'll see if
we're going to do Aaron Gordon. We're not going to do Eric Gordon. How about that?
We're going to move into the next generation. So don't go anywhere. We're going to get into our little 2K rating system when we come back. Continuing our final segment here on the Launchpad Podcast, we're going to be doing a little bit of a rating grading system here of the Rockets players.
Which means we're renaming you to Donnie 2K. There we go.
Okay, well,
you were sitting on that one, weren't you?
I
swear to God, I was not. I was sitting here like, I'm multitasking. So like I looked up from my phone and I was like, oh, wait a minute. We like of all the Don nicknames we have, like Donnie 2K just works out beautifully. So there you go.
All right. So watch out for the display name change for that later on today. But yes, so we're going to be using a little bit of a 2K-esque system here to grade out some attributes for these players. I'm going to let Paolo take it away over there just to introduce the categories and introduce a little bit of the thought process behind this recurring segment that we are going to do for the next couple of pods.
So the point isn't to go super in-depth into it. The point is, well, it's off-season, right? I think it would be a cool, fun exercise to just the main 2K ratings, right? And we'll still leave a couple of them off, but we're going to go with inside scoring, so scoring at the rim, mid-range scoring, three-point scoring, playmaking, rebounding, interior defense, perimeter defense, and then for the young guys, I don't know if we're going to get into the older guys, we also will have potential, right? And we're going to use the numbers because Don is waiving his out. I was told there would be no math clause on his contract for the series. And so, we're going to start with Jalen Green. If y'all have any ideas on how to make this better, if you'd rather do the letters or if you think we should add a couple more parameters to it, make sure to drop a comment or add us on Twitter. And we can adapt as we go along. But for the first iteration of it with Jalen Green, we'll go with what I just said. I don't know who wants to start.
You got the categories. You got to kind of herd us along, man.
Sure. So
Paolo's fumbling is his host duties right now.
I'm just catching strays left and right. Nah, I'll go. So
Paolo's ball security slider is down to zero right now. Okay. Like he is just straight up turnover prone. It's not great. This is not looking great.
Like Steph Curry, when he had the ball and he was going to throw the behind the back pass, he just threw it straight out of bounds. That's what you just did right there.
Or Eric Gordon off the ankles.
Okay. We weren't going to get into that.
Oh, no. See, this is already too much time.
The EG baseline special. There we go.
This is my new favorite emoji is this one. Use that one all the time.
Don, what about the people that are not on YouTube, dude?
Well, if you're not on YouTube, please go to, well, I don't know the timestamp is here. Please check the third segment of the YouTube to see my emoji reference.
Gonna give people homework on the podcast.
That's right. Hey, sometimes you gotta do your homework.
Okay, so I'll start then. We should probably do maybe divide them into like groups of three and then go around. So it's not one.
You should have already had them divided. This is terrible show prep on your.
No,
behalf.
I have. God damn it.
The worst. Atone for your sins live on the podcast. Go, fix the segment.
What does atone mean?
It means, I don't know, fix your sins. Be better. Just, I actually have no idea what atone means.
See,
yeah,
it's biblical incense, okay?
Yeah.
There you go, to repent.
Up,
thank you, Don.
Your sins.
All right, where are we starting?
So we'll start with the three scoring categories. So inside scoring, mid-range scoring, and three-point scoring. For Jalen, I think right now, I think he gets to the rim really well. I don't think his finishing is the best because of his lack of physicality, because he doesn't get the calls, which is kind of unfair, but sure. So I'll give him, inside scoring, I'll give him an 81. Mid-range scoring, he was kind of, so in mid-range scoring, I'll give him a high rate or a high grade. But his tendencies, right? His tendency is a little low still, because if you count the entirety of the season, he started shooting them later on, but not at the beginning. So mid-range, I'll give him a 78. And then three-point shooting, I'll actually give him a higher grade than what his percentages suggest, because I think he got a lot better to end the season. And that he was shooting tough threes as well. He was shooting step backs. He was shooting off of movements. Besides the normal catch and shoot that he does shoot, he was shooting pull-ups, right? So I think that has to be taken into consideration. So I'll actually give him like an 83 in three-point shooting.
I like that. Paolo stole my three-point shooting number. In my head, I was thinking 83 the whole way. I'm going to go in reverse order here of yours. I'll work my way from the outside in as far as his scoring numbers. I'll go 83 for sure on the three-point shot. That's kind of what I had my mind set on. And you're right. The degree of difficulty on some of the threes that he takes and is still able to convert them, I think should play into that factor. Although I'm going to flip it. I think I'm a little bit higher on his mid-range ability, even though his tendency isn't, you know, as much to shoot the mid-range, and it kind of, he worked himself back into that shot as the season went along. I feel comfortable grading him higher on his ability to finish shooting that mid-range shot than I do on his ability at the rim currently. And a big part of that is the size, you know, the physicality element, which I think will be drastically different this next season. You know, adding, you know, 5-10 pounds of muscle, whatever he adds to his frame this offseason is going to help him out a lot being in the weight room. So I'm actually going to go 80 on his mid-range scoring number, and then I will drop his slider a little bit lower on interior finishing. I'll put him at like 77 as an interior finisher.
Okay, so I'm going to take this a little bit of a different way. I'm going to incorporate dunking ability into the rim scoring. Obviously, Jalen's a very strong dunker. I think there's a lot of times where Jalen will go up for a dunk and the guy that's going to contest it just won't even jump with him. I think we're going to see an even further acceleration of this going into this year as he's stronger and even adds a little bit more strength to his base and can jump maybe even a little bit higher. So I'm going to rate his rim scoring at 84. I think that's a little bit projection-y. I think I saw him in the G League be able to finish extremely well through contact. So I think if he adds a little bit of strength, I think he'll get right back to the balance and the finishing ability that he had from there. For his mid-range scoring, I'm going to go a little bit lower. I think his mid-range potential is very high, but he doesn't have like a consistent floater. He doesn't have a really consistent go-to move in the mid-range. He has a bunch of different moves, and I think that as his career develops, he'll find that one move that he's very consistent with in the mid-range. But right now, it's kind of, you know, all over the place mid-range-wise. He just does a bunch of different things decently, but not one thing extremely well. So I'm going to go mid-range scoring. I'm going to go with a 78. And then for three-point shooting, I'm going to go with an 83 as well. I think that's a good number for his three-point shooting. Obviously, towards the end of the year, it started to look very good. We're going to hope that that continues. It doesn't fall into the KJ Martin saga of starting the season slow and then turning it on to end the season. Hopefully he starts very well out the gate this year. But I think, you know, just from a form perspective, from a repeatability perspective, from a perspective of confidence taking the shot, I think, you know, that's a good number to dial in for him at the three-point shooting. And I think, you know, having a full off season to work with John Lucas on his form, you know, having that repeatability, having that muscle memory dialed in. Because last year you really see that he would kind of have two different shots from catch and shoot versus off the dribble. And you want those shots to really be the same. And so your form's, you know, consistent every time. So, you know, bringing those two types of shots closer together, I think, you know, that will really push him, you know, over that 85 mark if we see that this year. But for me, I'm good with three-point shooting at 83.
Okay, so that loops it back to me. I'm the next attributes that I'm going to group are, so I'll do, we'll just do two this time. I'll do playmaking and rebounding, and then we'll do the two defensive stats the next one, and then we'll finish off and we'll say potential. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
So for playmaking, right, I think he's a better playmaker than he gets credit for. I think he has some unique type of playmaking, as I said, in the way that he uses his athleticism to open up passing lanes and passing angles in specific, right? I do think that he misses a lot of the more simple reads. He goes up for finishes when he's clearly contested and the help has already come and he could just hit the corner shooter. And so because of that, his playmaking, I'll give him a 74 is what I'll give him. I think he'll get better over the year, but for now, I'll give him a 74 on his playmaking. And then his rebounding, right? I think it's really hard to rate because he's someone who's asked consistently to just run on the break. Unless the ball is coming directly to him, right? And in those cases, he's asked to get the ball and run on the break. He's usually the one running on the break and getting passed to finish the fast break, right? And so because of that, he's not getting funneled a lot of rebounds the way someone like Josh Giddey is, for example, because he's the best passer on the team with the Thunder. So he's tasked with getting the ball off the rebound and he'll get a lot of uncontested rebounds that way because he can just, you know, snipe a pass down the court to get an easy assist, right? And so because of that, I think he could be a good rebounder. And when he's asked to, he's all in the clutch, he'll get some insane rebounds because of his whipping ability. I'll give him I'll go a little bit higher than his playmaking. I'll give him a 76 because I think he's able to do it. He just doesn't get, it's not what's asked of him to do. Don?
All right. So let me open this back up. Playmaking, I would say Jalen came in as a very disrespected playmaker. And I also think that Jalen, he makes the right play a lot of the times to where he's not really trying to do too much. He'll move the ball along and keep it moving, things like that. But I think I would probably rate his playmaking, I think a 71 is a good rating. It leaves a lot of headroom to improve while not just being a total net negative. And then rebounding, you know, Jalen's someone who has a lot of athleticism. He's also, you know, a very smart player, very intuitive player. His rebounding numbers last year, I don't remember them being just jump off the page. Y'all remember his rebounding numbers just off the top here?
He'd walk away like some games where he just wasn't impactful on the boards whatsoever. And then he'd have other games where he, you know, crept up to around 5, 6, or 7. Like, you know, it feels like it can very much vary, but he was never, you know, I don't think he was, okay. I don't think he was ever at the forefront of being like a top tier rebounder for the team, but it swung a lot, right? It was like a pendulum between, you know, him being an impactful rebounder and racking up, you know, five plus rebounds, or him walking away with just 0 or 1 or 2 rebounds per game. Sometimes that happens. So, you know, it was, kind of one of the things that the coaching staff tried to impress upon him though last season was finding ways to impact the game besides just scoring the basketball. And because somebody like the like Jalen has, you know, the insane athleticism, he can be impactful on the boards and he can be the type of guy who grabs a rebound and immediately gets out in transition and you know gets on the break and goes to, you know, try and score at the other end, you know, while the other before the other team can set up. So
yeah.
I'd like to see him be more impactful on that end.
I just checked the number. It was 3.4 total rebounds. So, you know, not a crazy number, just rebounding wise. So I'm going to give him a 74 rebounding grade, just mostly off of athleticism, potential, things like that. I think, you know, we could see him very easily get to 5 this year. You know, if he just is more attentive in that area of his game. All right. Jackson, go ahead and give your grades for these two categories.
I'll start with rebounding since we were just on that one, and I'll give him like a 72 in the rebounding department. Like, you know, maybe it's a little bit too low. Maybe it's, you know, maybe I should be a little bit higher on his ability as a rebound, his potential ability as a rebounder. But again, he wasn't somebody that really felt like he was, you know, impactful on the boards by any stretch of the imagination. You know, he had a handful of games. Again, he hovered probably in between that 3 to 5 rebound area for a majority of the season, it feels like. I think he had, you know, if I'm eyeballing it here, he had about 25 games where he had either 2 or fewer rebounds, if I'm eyeballing that correctly. Yeah, 26 games where he had 2 or fewer rebounds, and then he had a handful of games where he had more than 5 rebounds, 10 games, basically 8 games, 10 games. Math is hard. I'm going to kind of lowball him on the rebounding number at 72. I'd like to see him be a better rebounder next season. I think that's an area that he can improve and become a little bit more impactful on, you know, finishing out defensive possessions strong. And I think that's actually something we're going to see out of him more because Alperen Şengün is the type of big that does the work boxing out opposing players. And even though Alpi at times wouldn't be the one to secure the rebound, he would be the one to guarantee the team gets the rebound by boxing out players, right? Whereas Christian Wood, if he wasn't getting the rebound himself, there were a lot of times other bigs were beating him out for the boards because he wasn't doing the early work of boxing out, things like that. So we could very well see KPJ's rebounding numbers, Jalen Green's rebounding numbers go up a little bit because Al P is willing to put in the work and just seal off the opposing big, even if he doesn't ultimately get the rebound. Kind of not quite like the Steven Adams role, right? But like, you know, boxing out the big, letting his guards get the rebound, and then watching them get out in transition. So 72 on the rebounding department. I'll give him a 72 as well on playmaking. I'm kind of in agreement with Paolo. I think at times he misses the simple read, although he is a very dynamic creator in the way that he can get to some of those assist opportunities for his teammates by leveraging his, you know, threat to score the basketball. I think that's what's going to make him maybe not like a truly elite playmaker, but somebody who can playmake at a high level further down the line. And we even saw flashes of it. So I'll go 72 on both fronts for now.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And so, that being said, we'll move on to the two defensive ratings. Perimeter defense, I think he did a lot better to close out the season. We saw the possessions where in the clutch he was locking up Donovan Mitchell. I think he will still struggle with more physical guards, but when it comes to the shifty ones, at least for now, I think he keeps up with them very well. He fights through screens very well. He doesn't get beat as often as he used to. At the beginning of the season, in the sense of just not knowing where to be, and so perimeter defense, I'm going to give him probably a 75, and then inside defense, I think he had some impressive blocks, right? Because you don't really rely on him to, if he's defending on the block, he's going to get beat basically every single time you get on a switch, right? It's not like James Harden, who's a guard, but he can defend bigs and the post and stuff like that. So inside defense, although he has some good weak side blocks at the end of the season, I think him using his athleticism for that is good. I think it's definitely the weakest part of his game, and you're not supposed to be good at it as a guard. So I'll give him like a 60 or something like that. It's just not a strength of his at all.
All right, so for perimeter defense, I would say I'll go I'll go 68 for perimeter defense. I think, you know, adding strength, adding defensive awareness to be in the right space, right place on help, things like that. I think that's going to quickly take him, you know, into the 70s and beyond. He has good athletic tools, definitely to be a good defender. But I think, you know, generally rookies, most of the time, unless you're, you know, future Hall of Famer Herb Jones, or, you know, probably the two guys that we're bringing in this year in Jabari Smith and Tari Eason, you know, most rookies aren't just the best defenders right out of the gate. And Jalen wasn't, and he got a little bit better as the year went on. He's definitely someone that tried hard defensively, but just, you know, wasn't able to really put it all together most of the time. So I'm fine with a 68 for him as a perimeter defender. And then as an interior defender, you know, I remember them talking about when he was on the Ignite, about how they would like go after him when he would defend in the post. I can't remember. I think it was Jared Jack was talking about that, and how, you know, he would compete in all those things. So I'm not just going to totally slander his interior defense. He does have a level of competitiveness, and he also does definitely need to, he definitely needs to add a lot of weight to be able to defend in the post. But I would say he does have a little bit of weak side shot blocking just with his vertical and things like that. So I'm going to go with a 58 for his interior defense. And, you know, like Paulo said, not really a category that guards need to be super diligent at generally, unless you're James Harden and they're using you as a post defender because that fits your strengths.
Yeah, this should be, I mean, a relatively quick one. I'll go, you know, let's say like 60 for the interior defense. There's not an expectation for Jalen Green to be able to play interior defense. There were plenty of times that we saw a big man get switched onto him and it was barbecue chicken just because Jalen doesn't have the sand in his pants to deal with something like that. He's not expected to be able to hold his own on switches. Guys have to be able to come over and double team. That's the expectation in the defensive scheme if teams are trying to take advantage of him on the interior, competitive nature or not. At the end of the day, if somebody's got 50 pounds plus on you, they're going to bully you if they get you pinned on the low block or something and they can just turn and they're already, you know, a whole, you know, arm's length taller than you and they just put their body into your chest and there's nothing you can do about it. So, yeah, 60 on the interior defense. Perimeter defense, I'll actually give him a 70. I'll give him a flat 70. I think that, you know, if you had asked me where he was at, you know, early in the season to start the year, somewhere in that 64, 65 range, you know, and I think he steadily improved as the season went on. My favorite thing about him was his ability as the season went on to navigate pick and roll coverages. I think that that was the thing that you saw him really struggle with early on. He would get like, he would get killed on pick and rolls early in the game. You know, and then as the season went on, he got much better about figuring out ways to navigate around them, right? Making himself smaller, squeezing through, really tracking his, you know, his man better on those pick and roll coverages. Is Jalen ever going to be a truly like lockdown one-on-one, you know, ball stopping perimeter defensive oriented threat? Like, I don't know. He wants to be a two-way force. And we've seen him take some strides in his rookie season to, you know, improve his defense. Given what he projects to be offensively throughout his career, as long as he's not a net negative defensively, I will be ecstatic with where he's at as a defender. So I think those are fair numbers for where he's at right now in his career.
Damn, I think this was the biggest gap we've had between numbers. I had him as a 75 and the second best was 70 by you. I mean, since we only have one stat left, to defend myself a little bit, I think it's mostly because his ISO defense is pretty good, right? I think there's stats to back it up. I obviously don't have him with me right now, but that was a narrative as the season went along that he was one of the best ISO defenders in the league. And so, I don't know. I think 75 is a pretty average, maybe to a little bit above average rating. So I'm so happy with that. And now the last one is potential, right? And as I said in segment before, I think he has the potential to be the best shooting guard in the league. And so judging that by 2K ratings, James Harden was the best shooting guard in the league for a while. And he was always 95, 96, right? Currently 96, 95 are Steph Curry, Jokic, Embiid, KD, and LeBron. 95 is Luke and Kawhi, right? So I'm going to put it at, I think his potential, if everything goes right, is the best shooting guard in the league, as I said. So I'm going to go with a 95.
Ooh. Yeah, I think that's, you know, as far as 2K rating scales are concerned, and, you know, it's been a minute since I actually like sat down and really dove into a 2K game, unfortunately. But you know, to my knowledge, right, like potential is the one stat where rookies tend to be like sky high, where it's just like, I mean, because at the end of the day, right, like Steph, LeBron, those guys, their potential numbers, you know, are what they are because they're already established, right? They've already kind of become the player that they're going to be. They don't have that room to continue improving or to, you know, exponentially increase how good they are. And so from that lens, from that standpoint, with Jalen Green, right, projecting to potentially one day be the best two guard in the entire NBA, I'll clock him at a 99 potential, right? That's not like, you know, slandering LeBron or Steph or any of them.
That's the best player in the league. You think he's got best player in the league potential?
Again, I don't want that's not how I view the potential slider. Maybe I'm misinterpreting the potential slider in NBA 2K. But you know, maybe I should crank it down a few points there. But as far as Jalen Green's true potential, right, his true ceiling. Like I think that's where his potential is at, is a clear cut like 99. I will rephrase, right? If you were to like clock it back and put Steph Curry after their rookie or, you know, sophomore year, or LeBron or any of those other top players, their potential should also be like clocked in at a 99 is my point, right? My reasoning for them being a little bit lower right now, and my, as far as my understanding of it, is they are established, right? They are already who they are as players, which is why their potential is no longer at that like 98, 99 threshold, because they're pretty much who they're going to be. That's how I'm understanding it. That's where I'm basing my logic argument on.
Yeah, the numbers I gave you are actually their current ratings. And so what I said was, I think his potential is as good as what Steph is right now, or what the best shooting guard in the league.
I thought you were asking me the actual potential stat. Isn't that a stat? That's a stat in 2K. Come on, man. You're killing me.
Yeah, and that's what the stat does. The stat caps your player. Like, your player can only develop up to that. I mean, it doesn't really matter because 99 is not...
Don's muted. He's the worst. Terrible production value.
So you're saying that Jalen can't ever become a 99 pal? I don't know. I didn't go into this podcast expecting you to come out of it a Jalen hater. But
wow.
Now here we are.
Lalo Alves. What the hell? No, I'm kidding.
Yowls.
No, I mean, okay, look, in that case, fine. Crank it back down to a 95 or a 96, right? Because that is his potential, right? If he has the potential to be the top two guard in the NBA, which I absolutely think he does, then yeah, put him at wherever is on par with modern day current Steph, LeBron, those top tier guys, right? Put his potential at that number. So I'll side with you. I'll go 96. How's that?
Don?
I'm just checking real quick to see if James Harden's ever 99 in 2K.
I don't think
this
he was.
This is bi-weekly.
I think you can only check.
This is bi-weekly.
Yeah, you can only check year by year, so you're going to be there forever if you're trying to find past.
I'm trying to check year by year.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it looks like... Go on.
You can only check like 2K22, and then it shows you the entirety of 2K22. Right.
Okay,
you
I
can
found
check.
It. You're a dirty liar. I found it. Hold on.
Probably not on the same website.
Okay, here we go. Hoops Hype, friend of the show, Mike Scotto. Shout out to you and everyone over at Hoops Hype. So James Harden, it looks like he capped out at a 96. So
that's
I'm
his all time rating.
Yeah, 96. That was as high as he got. So I'm going to say that Jalen can reach Harden levels, rating wise, and he can get also to 96. So that's what I'm going to go with for my potential stat. Final answer.
Okay. So I'm supposed to calculate the averages, right? So in 2K, for those who don't know, it's a weighted average, right? If you're a guard, your interior defense is not going to count as much, and your three-point shooting is going to count a lot more than it will for a center, right? So if we're calculating, I was told that it would be a little math, but not that much math. So I'll just calculate the normal average and see who's got the highest rating. And whoever's got the lowest will be considered a hater forever.
Damn, if I knew it was going to be like that, then I would have just started juicing all these categories. So, all right, Paolo, let's release the ratings with the pod. I don't think we need to do that. We can do the math on the back end. Me and Jackson do have to skedaddle.
We're working, man, Paolo. Sorry.
Paolo is ignoring me and doing the math anyway. So while Paolo does the math that we are not about to reveal here, you can find me on Twitter at Don Knock. You can find the pod at Clutch City CR. If you go in there in the description, you can find the YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcast links. I always forget Apple Podcast when I say that, and that's the one I listen to the most. I don't understand it. But anyway, Jackson, tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Y'all can track me down at JT Gatlin on the Bird app. That's where I post about all the stuff I do, Locked On Rockets, Locked On NBA, State of the Rockets, and of course, whenever I do anything with these two amazing gentlemen here on the Launchpad podcast.
And Paolo, please refrain from doing any more math and tell the people they can find your stuff.
Done.
Put the pencil down.
The math is done.
We will release the math later.
Okay, sure. But I'm just going to leak that the biggest hater is actually Jackson. So.
Okay, well, I'm not going to say I saw that coming, but Jackson was unfortunately Mobley Mob for a little while. We won't talk about that. But he has a G on his jacket right now. I'm guessing that's G for green. There you go. There it is.
but it's a red G. It's a red G, though.
The Rockets are red. What's the problem?
Oh, damn. Now I look silly. Yeah, y'all can find me. You can find me on Twitter at Paul Alves NBA. That's PAULOALVESNBA. Thing I do from podcasts like this one to the live shows on Twitter Spaces. We'll find itself linked on there.
All right. So that's going to do it for us. Until next time, y'all be safe and go Rockets.